This podcast is not meant to be informative or educational and has the potential to be completely irrelevant. This is Property Jam.
And welcome to this week's episode of Property Jam, the podcast where we talk about everything on the human side of property. And this week, we've got another lovely human with us. We've got the lovely Vicky Wuchet, which I hope I pronounced it right.
Very good.
joining us today. So I'm just going to hand straight over to you, Vicky, to tell us who you are, what you do. I see lots of books behind you. So give us a bit of a background about yourself.
Okay, so I started investing accidentally in 2004 in that my sister forced me to go to an event and there was a man talking about how you could put properties into pensions, not that I had a pension. And we got chatting to him and within a week we'd given him £40,000, which is absolutely not the way to do it. But he was a nice guy and we were so lucky. And he helped us buy our first property and then we were bought a second property with him. But then by 2008, I think I'd always known that property was a good idea anyway. My sister was more of the, she wanted it to look really nice, like she would live in it. She wanted it to be designer and I wanted it to work on a spreadsheet. So we were coming at it from two completely different angles. And in the end, we got an ex-council flat in London. So I won out. I don't think she's ever forgiven me. And yeah, and then we just did property training and carried on from there, really. And so now I either teach people how to do it, if that's the way they want to go, or more, I'm working with people who've either got busy jobs that are relatively high paying or with bonuses, or they're running businesses that have got a lot of cash in them. And I act as first the wealth strategy or wealth strategist to help them decide what they want. Then, if you like, a bit of a project manager where I manage the process through. And then at the end, a business mentor to make sure that it continues to be successful.
Wow.
Amazing.
And okay. I grow tomatoes when I'm not doing that.
And
that's well, your well, therapy.
Okay, so let's start with that one then. So how are your tomatoes doing?
Really good. Really good. I am somewhat obsessive in everything that I do. So it started because of the zombie apocalypse. You remember that? And my first thought was, when the zombies come, how are we going to feed ourselves? So I knew that the neighbours over the back had chickens, but I'd sort of need them, not the chickens to die, but the people to die, which is a bit harsh because obviously if they didn't die, they'd want to eat their own chickens. And Bob's a vegetarian. So I knew I needed to grow something, and obsessively in the February, way too soon, the whole house, the back bedroom, full of tiny little plants growing in seed pots. I planted over 4,000 seedlings that year.
And then the police turned up.
No. If you see my Facebook page, no, they weren't those sorts of seedlings. They were tomato seedlings and beans and everything else. And it's just sort of grown from there. And now I've imported some seeds from the States and I'm planting heritage tomatoes. So I've got 25 different varieties from teeny weeny currants up to mighty big beefs. I've got black and purple ones. I've got green stripy ones, yellow ones. They're really cool, really impressive.
Okay, I'm really hungry now. Jump in here. You lost me at zombie apocalypse. You know when you just casually said, do you remember the zombie apocalypse? Did I miss it?
Yeah, no, you didn't miss it. Other people called it COVID.
Okay, cool. I was like, is that like what?
Well, no, but at one point it had got very Hollywood, hadn't it? It was like, something's coming. Shut yourself in. Don't speak to anybody because who knows? People might, the ones that didn't die might have turned into zombies.
It was very zombie. Okay, now I get it. I actually thought a whole apocalypse happened that I didn't know about. And I'm like, I know I moved to Bristol, but I can't be that clueless. Like...
you know, if the one thing you did is fall asleep and miss a zombie apocalypse and then wake up again, you're probably doing all right.
That's true. Okay, listeners, we are clarified. It was yes. Got it right. Cool, great. Tomorrow.
I was also thinking about this because I've got a mother-in-law who's a prepper. So always foreseeing the next zombie apocalypse.
What now?
we can just refer to it as a pandemic if you want.
Well, I mean, I prefer apocalypse. You know,
I'm all for it. Like, yeah.
prefer it, but you can't pronounce it.
So has now that you're growing your own produce, does that have you now become like one of these like preppers where you buy your bags of pasta in by the ton?
No.
Especially, how can I make the best tomato and get a rosette at the local fair?
No, neither. Right. Somewhere in between. When the apocalypse was over, I then went to some of the local council meetings around climate change, because where I've been, I've always been. One of the things I was called was the property mermaid, because I love scuba diving. So whenever we've scuba dived, we've been very aware of human impact on the ocean. And then, of course, the apocalypse stopped some of that. So then turned my attention to sort of more natural ways, got connected with the Royal Horticultural Society, which is as nearly as hard to say as apocalypse, the RHS, and they give loads of tips. And then I did lessons with them, and we shouldn't be using peat, and we should water things with rainwater. And when I went to the council meeting, and it's probably the same in your areas, they are all, excuse my French, most of them, crap at this sort of stuff. Yeah. They're so busy working out how to empty your bins and not fill in the potholes, that they're not doing that prepping for the next apocalypse, which is climate change. So I did a 10 o'clock post on Facebook, and you should never do one of those. Obviously, I know that, but I got loads of response. I've then set up a local village Facebook group called Englefield Garden Greenies. And the goal is, how can we, just using our own gardening habits, have a positive impact on the climate? So the RHS has 10-point plan of things that you can do. Plant for the pollinators. As I said, peat, don't concrete your drive. Pull up a paver, plant a tree, make your own compost, blah, blah, blah. And I work with the local university, Royal Holloway University, and get one of their students to work with me every year. And we do a questionnaire, and we get everybody to mark themselves against the 10-point plan. And the goal is that eventually I'll get enough momentum that we can start to see that we're improving the village score. And then that's moved on to taking my tomatoes down to the local food bank, village hall, they cook food. Then we've got a community centre that's called The Hub, and we're doing gorilla planting. So tonight, because I'm going on holiday, I'm donating half of my tomato plants to a gorilla food growing project, that's another mouthful, that is going to be set up at Stain Station, and they are going to take my tomatoes, and then people who are getting on and off the trains will be able to pick a tomato.
Wow. That's all very amazing stuff is going on there.
Yeah. And then in between that, I occasionally buy houses.
I was going to say, is there property stuff that happens in and around the tomato zombie apocalypse stuff?
Yes, yes.
Mermaid-y stuff, yeah.
Yes, yes. So we've got the holiday coming up, so I've had to hurry up and do the house stuff. So in the last 40 days, I've secured the sale of 4 properties for my clients and done all the prep and everything else and been off and viewed them and done all of that sort of stuff. But it does sometimes interfere with the tomatoes.
I can imagine.
So there's definitely some property going on there. I was going to kind of ask you a question, which we ask all of our guests when they come on, which is, what does the human side of property mean to you? So how does someone... Yeah, go on.
Yeah, sorry, cut across you. I think the human side is the essential side, and it comes at it from all angles. Like, what's driving you? So on my side, I was a single mum, technically homeless, but basically living in my parents' house and had to be housed. And so when I started investing, what I wanted to do was provide decent houses for single mums, because if they've got a solid base, then they can focus on their families and making the most for their children, which I think is crucial. The other side of it is, our clients, our tenants are humans, and to work with them, not to be greedy, but also not to be gullible. We're obviously buying from people, and we're working with teams of people. So, I mean, the human side comes all the way through. But I think the biggest driver for me is that I want to provide a decent home for someone. I don't now just insist on single parents. I've broadened it. It's okay if you are married or in a happy relationship. You don't have to be miserable and alone and struggling on your own, although there's still a, you know, there are still a few of those that are single parents, but just providing a decent home for someone. And then on the flip side of it, when I'm now working with my clients, I'm helping my clients, if you like, break that mold. We're taught at school that you need to go and get a job. There's very little that is about, oh, you're quite interested in this. You could change the world if you pursued that line. We're not really inspiring, I feel, inspiring our young people to make a difference. Maybe there's a few pockets of it, but it's not, that's not number one on the curriculum, which is what I feel we should be doing. And so there's all of these people now that have wandered into middle age and they've done everything they've been told. They've gone to school, they've probably gone to university, they've got debt, then they bought a house, that's more debt, and now they have to go to work to service the debt. But at the end of it, the number of particularly men that would come to me and say, I want to do something else. I want to invest in property. I need to give up my job. I'm just not seeing my children. Mm. And the number of women coming to me saying, we need to create financial security so my husband can leave work before it kills him. Because they're all on that merry-go-round. We were told it was going to be fun and it's not fun and they want to get off. There's another human side there that I'm making a difference to my clients' lives by helping them create this sustainable, low management, low time management portfolio that provides them with additional cash coming in so that they can feel a little bit more comfortable and then a bit more comfortable to start making other decisions in their lives.
So when you work with your clients, then is it are you generally just sourcing, doing portfolio building? Is it always property, or do you then branch out across different types of investments and point them in different directions?
So when we start off and we have the conversation, sometimes I'll meet people who at the end of it, maybe they don't have the money or maybe they don't have the interest in property, but they do have the interest in creating another stream of income. And if it then ties in, for example, particularly with shares and trading, then I've got someone that I know and trust and have known and trusted for years. I'm not a trader myself, but I would refer them to them. And I have referred clients over and they now work with him and they're trading. And we had the summer social at the weekend and I bumped into a few of them. And that was really funny because they've been my mentees for a year and then they went and worked with him. And then I finally met them in person because obviously we did everything online for a while. I'm not a fan of crypto. I had a play with that briefly and just got robbed. I think it's too easy if you don't know what you're doing to just get conned. I mean, you could get conned anywhere, couldn't you? But
yeah, it was just the next process, the next thing, which was too easy, unregulated, and there's hype and
even when you've got someone who's doing it and they trust you. And you trust them rather, you can still head off down a rabbit hole. Yeah. So I do refer people out, but I'm also a fan of focus first, diversify second, so get that foundation in. How many do you want? 3, 5, 10 properties. Let's just get in the foundation of properties that gives you that income. And now you've got it. So now what are we going to do? Do you love property and actually want to keep going? Well, then maybe let's go on to the HMOs, or maybe let's go on to developments, or maybe let's go on, if the market's right, to some flipping. Or have you got what you needed? And now what you want to do is you want to go and do some trading, or you want to do something else. So I've got one client who's a wine investor. So he's got his properties and now he buys wine, and he does manage to keep some of it as well. He doesn't just drink it all.
I really like the idea of investing in wine or alcohol generally. I've got a friend who invests in whiskey, and it's performing really well.
Yeah, Bob's looked at that.
Yeah.
But that's, again, it's whiskey's quite complicated because you've got to keep it in these, basically it's a warehouse that is a little island of its own so that you don't get all the tax and everything. And so you buy it by the barrel, but then you've got to be careful about what's your exit strategy, because as soon as you bottle it, then you can, So none of this, but then property isn't it? None of it is just straightforward. None of it is easy.
Yeah.
It's got rules, but then that applies to business. So if you wanted to be a taxi driver, there would be rules and regulations. If you wanted to open up a shop, if you want to be, you know, a masseur or a physical fitness coach. Everything has rules. There is an environment that you are working in, that business environment, and you need to understand the environment that you're working in. And that goes with property, crypto, whiskey, wine, the lot.
I think that's a really good point. And property in particular, I think a lot of people just think because they've seen it on the telly or they've done a loft conversion in their own house, that they just get the general rules because it's property, something very familiar, something very tangible in their life. But, you know, it's like you say, it's an investment vehicle. It has rules, it has regulations, it has challenges, it has ways of operating that you do need to know in order to do it well. And I think that gets underestimated a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. Homes Under the Hammer's got a lot to answer for.
Oh, grand designs, all of it. Yeah, 100%.
But wait till we get whiskey in the warehouse. Then they'll all be investing in whiskey. What about plots in cemeteries?
Oh, okay.
People's roofs on which you then put solar panels. I mean, some of the things, rice paddies in places. I mean, some of the stuff that we've been sent.
Shipping containers was something that I contemplated a few years ago and actually should have done that one.
Yeah, it's a good one. We've got a shipping container as like storage, right? And there's a local farm that's got these shipping containers on it that's just up the road. And they must have 34 of them on site. And we ran the numbers on what they're charging per month. That is a tidy little earner. That is nice.
It's also the market for, so when I've said shipping containers, it's you rent them back to the shipping companies.
Ah, okay.
So it's like buy to let, and they hold their value for quite a long time.
Right.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, we had a shipping container in one location, but we needed to move it. And in the end, the cost of moving it and then putting it somewhere else, and where we had it, we didn't have to pay, and where we were going to move it to, which was closer to us because we moved, we were going to have to pay. It just wasn't worth it. And we just left it there in the end. It just,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, it's like everything. It just goes back to the spreadsheet, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
If it makes sense to you, I think that's the key, whether it's property, shares, whiskey, shipping containers, if it makes sense to you, if you can see where the need is, if you can see how the numbers work and you feel comfortable, then take that next step towards it. If you don't, or if you feel at any point that slight tug in the cheek where they've got you hooked and they're reeling you in, hold your ground until you're comfortable to take that step forward. There shouldn't be a pull in the cheek. The number of people that I speak to that have been conned, even yesterday, there was one where just a snippet of it. So it was, you know, buy to let deal, great, you know, BMV, all of that malarkey going on. And they said capital appreciation in the next 5 years. So you're going to buy it at 56, something like that. You're going to do some work to it that might, they said, take it up to 80. And then it was going to be worth 110 in 5 years. So a 30 grand increase on an 80,000 property over 5 years. I don't know about you, but I think the market's slowing. I mean, certainly where I'm investing, it's still holding strong. All the stats that are saying that there's going to be a -7, you know, price correction, because it's an average, I think that's nonsense. I think you've got to look at the areas. But I mean, up in the north, that's a big ask, I feel.
I think, basing a deal on projected unknown capital appreciation is just, that would instantly be a red flag for me, because I'm like,
you can't do that. Your past performance doesn't predict,
yes.
Yeah, future gain. Yeah, that's investing 101.
Yeah.
But also, you've got to pay that mortgage for 5 years.
Exactly.
To potentially get that capital gain. And then how are you going to get that capital gain? There's only two ways. One, you sell the asset. Well, why would you do that? Because what are you going to do with the money? You've just lost all the cash flow. And the other thing is, if you then remortgage to pull the money back out, you've increased the debt, you've increased the costs, you've reduced the cash flow again. So, you know, it's got to be all part of a package. Why are you in this? And yeah, that's it really, isn't it?
Yeah, this is where people just don't have the kind of savvy or the know-how to appraise something like that when it's offered to them. If you don't know any different, because especially when you're new at property, because so many people think the capital appreciation is how it's done. You buy something, it goes up in value over 10 years and blah, blah, blah. But it's so much more complex than that. And this is where the rules come in, you know, knowing how to play something your way based on the strategy that you're looking to employ, not just going along because some sourcing agent says, yeah, it's going to be worth like 30% more in 5 years. It's just nonsense. It's dangerous.
And then the spreadsheet never lies.
No.
Unless you put in rubbish at the front end.
Yeah, well, yeah, unless you lie.
Yeah, exactly. You can fudge the numbers to make them look good, but you've got to be realistic with it all.
That's what my old IT teacher used to say, is like crap in, crap out.
That's true. Yeah, love it. Totally true. Yeah.
Gotta love a spreadsheet.
I can see that. You're the way you light up.
Yeah.
You talk about it.
She's quite when cool, isn't she?
When I was at university, so I went to university late, like after my marriage broke up. I think I must have been about 28 when I started. So like I stood out like a sore thumb amongst all these 18-year-olds. There were a few slightly older ones, and I got into my comfort zone when all the adults came in the evening. But within like the first year, I'd been a bit gobby in a corridor, mainly because there was quite a nice looking guy using there was a nice looking man using a photocopier in a corridor, and I wanted an excuse to just be there and strike up a conversation, but I didn't have anything to photocopy. So I knocked on the door of one of my lecturers, hoping they weren't in or that they would make me wait outside because they were busy, because then I could, you know, like when he finished, go, you know, ha ha ha. I hadn't even thought what I was going to say. Anyway, she said, come in. And then I was stuffed and she's on the phone. And I'm going, no, I'll wait out here, because I didn't really have any reason to go in because I wanted to talk to him. But then she called me in. And she's on the phone and I'm listening to her, and she doesn't really want to teach this module. I can hear that. So when she hung up, I went, I could do that for you. What? I don't even know. I don't even know what I said. I'm not a teacher and I don't know what she's just saying. And then she said to me, can you teach PageMaker, which is a Mac piece of software? And I went, do you have the software? So I didn't lie. I don't even know how to switch a Mac on at this point. Do you have the software? She said, yes. And then she said, so do you think you could teach it in September? I said, would you support me? She said, yes. And I went, okay, then. And then I spent the entire summer holiday learning how to use a Mac when I only had a PC, and learning PageMaker and preparing obsessively 12 weeks of class. Oh. So I did 12 weekly classes to teach this bunch of young people how to use PageMaker. And then I also got a gig teaching Excel, totally in my zone with Excel. And that was back on PCs. And then that was it. I was a university lecturer for 11 years. Now I did do training and stuff as well. And I ran being a university lecturer alongside being a single mom of two kids under three, doing my own degree, and then starting the university lecturing. And I also had a job where I used to switch on all the computers and check all the papers was all set up, or do all the computer labs, set all the computer labs up every morning, and a couple of other jobs as well. Wow. So I had two kids, five jobs, and got a first class degree, and then went on to do a master's, and then eventually they kicked me out. They made me redundant.
You have to thank them. Thank them for the opportunity to go and
do property
portfolio in your business.
Yes, it's really interesting actually, because I wanted to be Dr. Vicky. And in order to be Dr. Vicky, you've got to do research and you've got to write papers and you've got to write books and you've got to be published.
What's that behind you?
Yeah, I've written five books. And it doesn't matter. Does it matter that I'm not Dr. Vicky?
You can still go and be Dr. Vicky.
Yes. But it was the PhD that I wanted. I wanted Vicky Boucher PhD, that sort of Dr. Vicky. And that comes from not doing well at school. My primary school reports were Vicky asks too many questions.
No.
How can that be a thing?
Because we do not want young children asking questions. Vicky's always got her hand up.
So
either because, so the teachers, if you think about primary school, right, and you get rewarded for this, so the teacher says, What's 2 plus 2? And everybody puts their hands up. Well, I'd put my hand up, wouldn't I? Put your hand up if you know the answer. Put my hand up. What's the point of not putting your hand up if you know what the answer is? Exactly. So I would put my hand up. And then she might do something or other, and she might say, right, okay, do that work. And I put my hand up if I've got a question. Why would you not put your hand up if you've got a question and there's somebody there in the room? And that translates to networking. How many times have you been, when we used to do live networking events, gone to a networking event and there's someone at the front of the room and they go, any questions? And if you stand at the back of the room, like auction life, and you're looking off the wall and you look around, maybe one person puts their hand up. That would always be me. Always. I've always thought through and I've always got a question for the speaker, because what is the point of standing there at the front of the room and saying to this audience, I'm here, tap into me. I will tell you anything you like. What would you like to know? Hopefully you found what I've said useful. What would you like to know? And then the tumbleweed just rolls across the head of the audience.
I love the questions at the end of a presentation. And if I don't get stopped, I go on for going for far too long.
Yeah, I could do another hour of questions off the stage.
Exactly. Well, do you know the burning question with everything that you've said, which was extremely impressive how you did all of that, but did you speak to the guy at the photocopier?
Oh yeah,
no, because by the time I came out, I must have spent like half an hour in with her. By the time I came out, he'd gone, and I never saw him again.
He was probably a bit of an arsehole.
And you know what, I was out of one marriage, and I have now been with Bob, it was 22 years last year, and we got married after he completed a 22-year apprenticeship. And we had our first wedding anniversary at the weekend.
Oh, wow.
Congratulations.
Aww. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Glad I never met the man at the photocopier.
Yeah, he's not the one that got away. He just got away. We don't like him.
Yeah. He wasn't even one that got away. He was just a man at a photocopier.
Exactly.
But thanks to him, you had an 11-year career as a lecturer. So
yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Whoever you are out there, yes. So we ask our guests to come prepared with a question for us, to potentially put us on the spot. So, Vicky, what question? I'm worried, especially since you're the queen of asking questions.
Yes, I was sort of like wandering down all sorts of things, and I could be clever and ask property questions, which probably would add value to the audience. But you did say that this could be irrelevant somewhere at the beginning, I think, of your introduction. So given that I've shared with you my interest and my love of tomatoes, what are you passionate about in your spare time?
Oh, good one.
Oh,
I'm going to hand over to Niall for that, because... You're green thinking as well. Maybe it's not.
Tomatoes or anything like that. Just anything that you're, because I've said tomatoes and then I'm running this community group. What is driving you outside? I suppose in a way it changed the question. What do you do in your spare time? But what is driving you? Why are you doing the property thing? What's the thing on the outside that this all allows you to do, maybe?
Okay, so that's, for me, it's travel. Travel and the freedom to be able to travel, because I guess everyone talks about freedom and financial security or financial freedom or whatever it might be, but with not a real lot of thought as to what you do when you are financially free, what do you do with all this time and you have the money to do what you want. So travel is my big passion. I actually do like gardening as well. I've got a degree in horticulture. Although I live in a one bedroom flat at the minute, I don't have a garden, but I do love gardening as well. Yeah.
Oh, we can have a chat tomatoes later then. Because I've also been doing hydroponics.
Okay.
Which is a whole step up. So it's a bit like I did all right at primary school, and now I'm going to go into doing that PhD. I've literally gone primary school, I plant a seed, it grows, I stick it in some dirt, I get some tomatoes.
Yeah.
As long as I remember to water it, to hydroponics. And I would say I have failed this year to get the chemicals right. Mm. You know, because if you're just hydroponics is a reservoir of water, a tower, you plant your plants into the tower with no mud, which is normally where we plant things to live, because that's how they get their nutrients. And you just have this filtering system to pour water on them. And it's just water. So you've got to get your balance right of the chemicals to feed them. But mm-hmm. the reason for doing it is because you could grow 80 times the crop in the same amount of space using 3% of the water.
Mm. Wow.
And given that water is a big issue, we've got solar panels. They switch on. The sun is basically pumping the water around. And that would be, and we've also got a rainwater harvesting system. So we've got a big tank in the garden and we can take the water out the tank to put in the containers and then it circles around the system. But I overfed them with the stuff that would make them go for the green leaves, which I think is the nitrogen. So they were too green, too mm-hmm. thirsty on the water. And then all the fruit was buried underneath because there was just so much greenery on there. But anyway, that's a whole more detailed tomato conversation than right now.
Love it.
Matt and Joe, what are yours as well then?
The other two passions I have is family, a young family. So a 3-year-old and a 7-month-old. That is a big part of my life.
Must be good lighting because I'm not really seeing many bags under the eyes there for a 7-month-old.
I've got a very forgiving wife as well who's currently on maternity leave. So she does pick up a lot of the slack, but soon to end in a couple of weeks. So the bags will probably start appearing more and more. But the other passion is music. So I've been a piano player my entire life. Throughout my 20s, I was a professional pianist, session musician, teacher, ran a music school. I owned and ran a music school. I set it up, sold it. That was in Oxfordshire. And then got into property and transitioned from the music school into property. So that is my passion. And I moved from doing music for the money and trying to make a business out of music, which is a very, very difficult thing to do because it's not a highly valued skill, even though it's a very difficult skill to acquire. Mm. And now I do music on my own terms. So the property can fund the development of the music that I want to do, which just happened to have behind me an album that took 4 years to get together, which we released last year. It's called Delirio and the band's called Lokeba. We do Afro-Cuban music like salsa, that type of thing.
Love it. 13-piece
band that nice. We spent a long time putting together and recording with some world-class musicians and producers. So it's getting a decent amount of radio play across the world in the very niche genre that it is. And currently looking for gigs, currently out there make a bit of a name for ourselves in that particular genre, so we can go and gig 6-8 times a year at some really nice festivals and jazz festivals and a bit of touring. The UK is not the best place for it. It's got a little bit of that scene, but if you go to the States or Europe or Latin America, we've got some hits, and our singers are Cuban. So they're both from Havana. We could go and do a tour in it. Well, we could go get gigs in Cuba really easily, but we wouldn't get paid. They would put us up and provide us everything we needed, but we'd have to pay to get there. So it would be part of a wider tour. So we're chatting to some people about maybe doing Central America and come back via the States and Miami using local horn sections rather than taking the entire band and just taking the core essence and then rehearsing people as we go or taking them with us locally. So it's exciting, but I'm not entirely sure when I'm going to do it because I've also got all these big travel plans. Next year, I'm going to Bali for 2 months. I'm going to the Paris Olympics for 2 weeks. It's my 40th next year. Also going to Malta for a week and a half. So we've already found it difficult because we've been offered gigs when I'm in Bali. I've said to the band, I can't do it. We've been offered a couple of festivals. So it's like, let's see if we can slot it in. So that's the thing when you do lots of things, you've got passion for travel, for music, for family. And what we need to do, let's book a tour for 2025.
Yeah.
So we can all go.
Yes.
And combine a lot.
Oh, I was already there with you. I don't see a problem. You're touring with the band. They're going to put you up while you're there. So you've only got to pay the tickets. And I know that tends to often be the more expensive side of it. You just take the family out, particularly before your 3-year-old turns 5 and has to go to school. and you're all out there as a family.
We could do that next year, although I might end up being away for the entirety of the year. I'm not entirely sure how we're going to get any property training or investing done.
Oh, we'll make these two do it.
No chance. Yeah, yeah.
Well, what about Jo? Yeah, she's... Well, there's a bulge under that T-shirt, I see.
There is, yeah, 8 months pregnant. Whoa! So I've got the whole family thing going on, or certainly coming my way. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a complete change of focus, you know, outside of property and teaching property. And yeah, so that's an exciting new chapter. But I guess the reason I do it, I mean, I'm a bit like Niall. My biggest value is freedom. So it is about the choice to do what it is I want to do. And, you know, working 9 to 5 in the university sector for many, many years just wasn't right for me. So being able to spend my time pursuing my professional interests is a really important part, and personal interests is a really big thing for me. And on the professional side, I'm a professional speaker, so I tour around the country, have big ambitions to tour around the world, talking about my favorite topic, which is sexual energy, and how you bring and channel that energy to perform better in life and business. And it's something I just love to talk about. It's something that I've always been passionate about. It's a thing I've always known is there. I've only just put keynotes and coaching and workshopping to it now. So yeah, the freedom to do that is just, which involves travel, you know, which involves meeting new people, which involves variety and conversation. And yeah, it's great. It's just brilliant. And property allows you to do all of that stuff. It's wicked.
And there's some uncertainty there in it, isn't there? Because even though you know what your talk is, you don't know how it's going to go over to this audience. Or again, that thing with questions, what questions you might get asked at the other end.
Oh, and you never quite know. And it's funny you talk about men coming to talk to you at the end of events. It's often blokes that come and talk to me because they're so much more comfortable talking about sexual energy in their professional practice. Whereas women feel a lot more judged, like it's not okay to talk about it in that space. Yeah. So opening up to a female audience and creating a safe space where they're, you know, that shame or judgment that they necessarily feel around sexual energy gets removed. And, you know, we open up that conversation in a much more open and safe way. Really big part of my mission. So, yeah, love it.
So have you been to see Barbie the movie yet?
Not yet, but it's on my list, honestly. I've got to see it before the baby arrives.
Yes. Have you?
I've seen it.
What did you think?
I fell asleep in the middle.
Oh,
no! Then you have to watch it again. There's a piece in the middle that was shockingly good. There's the little bit of reminiscence if you ever had a Barbie doll, or for a boy, you could relate it to, you know, Action Man or whatever, these dolls. But it's the fact that Barbie believes that she's made a difference to girl children in the real world. And then there are these two human characters, and I won't spoil it for everybody, but when the human mother gives her talk back in Barbie world, even now it's giving me chills about this thing about, it's in Barbie world, Ken is nothing. He does beach.
Yeah,
does beach. He's just so funny. He does beach. He can't do life-saving and he can't do surfing. He can just do beach, which means stand there with his shirt slightly open, showing off his ripples.
Good on him.
Yeah, but he doesn't feel valued. And so, of course, when this situation happens and he has this opportunity to change things for himself and feel respected, unfortunately, his respect comes at the subjugation of the female side of it. So it left me thinking, is that what's wrong? That, you know, it's different. We're humans and we put down dogs and we control them, and we control horses and we cage other things that we don't want, and we control everything else because we think we are the superior being on the planet. But actually what we're also doing is fighting within our own species. You know, girls are better, boys are better. You know, men, we're like, it's quite interesting that we're half and half in this particular podcast. But you know, men have been in charge for a long while. But if you go back in history, there are societies where the female energy has been more in charge. And can't we just, couldn't we just even it up a bit? Couldn't we just respect one another more so that the men don't feel like they're being emasculated and have That's to right. all be metro men? They can be whatever they want and we can yeah. be whatever we want. We're not, we don't have to stay in the kitchen. First time I went to Liverpool, the letting agent said to me, "Oh, you're Vicky." I said, "How did you know?" And he said, because I didn't even open my mouth, he said, "Oh, because you've got blonde curly hair," whereas they would have all had straight, that all the women look the same, blonde straight hair, dark straight hair. And then he said to me, "Why are you up here investing in property? You should be at home in the kitchen."
What?
Where was this?
Yeah, this was in, this was when we went up then, 2008.
Shut up.
And he was a young guy. And he did say it with a cheeky grin, which is why I didn't punch his nose.
Yeah. Wow.
I did stay working with him for like, I don't know, 5 years or something, but that was it. And that,
if you tell him off like after year two or three, saying you remember what you said to me when you first met me.
Oh yeah, I think much sooner than that.
Yeah,
I think probably he got a retort straight away if I would know me, you know. Yeah. But there is that feeling up there. There is that feeling up there that I don't feel that the females in that area of the North, and I can't speak for all of the North, I don't know that they're as empowered. They're a bit more Barbie, but not how Barbie thinks Barbie is, how we in the human world thinks Barbie is.
Yeah, we have talked about that on a previous episode, not necessarily divided it up by region. I don't think we've gone into that level of detail, but you know, just the pockets of inequality that still exist in the industry, but also where we're kind of almost ambassadors for equality in the industry.
Yeah.
You find a real mix of the two. So it's kind of, yeah, bittersweet in property, I think.
Yes, yes. And it is yeah. quite a male work environment, isn't it? It is yes. quite a male work environment. And I still find that there are a few men that will talk down to the women, mm-hmm. but the majority of the men in the property world, I think, are as equal as us, and we're as equal as them.
I agree.
But there's always just the odd few. Yeah. And while I'm not casting aspersions about the North, it is just the subsection of tenants that I meet. So it's a very small slither of all the women that are in the North. But it's interesting that how they look, how they behave, how the men speak about them has this Barbie-esque-ness about it. It is about how they look.
Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Just
well, we really could probably go off on a whole completely different tangent.
Yeah,
there,
that's another podcast.
We probably need to wrap things up.
Well, for our final, what we're going to do today, we're going to play a game of episode roulette. Now, this is something we do with all of our guests. And what I'm going to do, for those of you who are new to listening to Property Jam, I'm just going to explain. I'm going to scroll through the previous episodes of Property Jam, all 200 and odd, however many there are of them. And Vicky is then going to say, stop. And we're going to ask Vicky's opinion on that particular topic. So,
happy to play as long as it doesn't land on HMO land licensing.
Yeah, fair one. Yeah,
okay.
Fair.
If it goes on HMO licensing, I'll scroll to the next one. So I am now scrolling.
Okay. Stop.
Stop. Ooh, episode 12.
HMO licensing.
Very beginning.
No, that was
11.
You're safe.
No, episode 11 literally is property yeah. licensing.
Yes.
That's complete fluke. We're at episode 12, which is goal setting.
Oh, yeah, I love goal setting. Yeah, I remember listening to somebody who said that as soon as you say what your goals are to other people, you have taken the power of the goal away because your mind thinks that you've got it. And I just like, rubbish. If you do not have a map that lets you know where you think you want to be heading, and you can change your mind, and you do not then work out what are the steps to get there. So I want to go to the shops. In order to go to the shops, got to drive my car to get into the car park because I want to buy stuff and bring it back. And in order to get in the car, I've got to go out the front door. In order to go out the front door, I've got to go downstairs and get out the chair. I know the steps. I've got to get out the chair, go down the stairs, out the door, in the car, and then I can get to where I want to go. And if you don't do that, then you'd stay sitting here in the chair. So you need to have this direction. And there's a guy called Jim Rohn, and he was a very famous speaker in the States, and anybody who's basically done any self-development will know him. And he just has this most amazing way of speaking, and I wish I could mimic him because I love his voice. And there was one of the talks that he did, which was about setting the sail on your boat. And I wish if you can find the clip of the set the sail on your boat talk that he gives, he's going, but if you don't set the sail on your boat, you don't know, you know, the boat's never going to go anywhere. And that's it. You're never going to move from where you are unless you decide where it is that you want to move to. And that's the essence of a goal. Where do you want to go? And then you can break it down into the small steps to get there. And it's not something to be fearful of, because if on your journey to that goal, you went, oh, didn't really challenge myself there. I thought I was only going to go to Tesco's, and really where I want to go to is Harrods. And then you head towards Harrods and you go, actually, I don't want Harrods. I want to go to Paris. Expand your goals. That's not a problem. And sometimes it's easier to expand your goal as you're heading towards it rather than sit here thinking, I've never left the house before. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to Australia, and I've got no clue how to get there because I've just picked about the most complicated furthest away place I could get to. Start off with your little goals and expand them. And the little goal, I've gone to Tesco's, is then a success. If I can go to Tesco's and back, great. Then I could go into the next town and back, and then I could go to London and back, and then I could go to Paris and back, and then I could go to Australia and back. And maybe you get there a lot quicker than if you put in such a huge goal. Sometimes I used to go to these personal developments, a bit like Tony Robbins back in the day, a guy called Chris Howard, and he would stand in the room and he would say, who wants £10,000? Yeah, who wants £100,000? Hands up, who wants £1 million? Hands up, who wants £1 billion? And of course, people in the, he's like, fired you up. Who wants £1 billion? Yeah, I want £1 billion. And I'm sitting there thinking, but I know I just spoke to that guy in front of me and he's on benefits and he's now setting a goal for £1 billion. What's the chance? And I don't want to limit him, and maybe he did get it, but how much harder is his journey going to be if he's sitting here thinking, right, from being on benefits, I want £1 billion by the end of the year. Whereas if he just went, I want to get a job, and then from a job, I'm going to build some savings. And from that, I'm going to create a business or a portfolio or whatever. And then he would have maybe £1 million at the end of the first year. And then he'll have £1 billion in 10 years or something. You can get there. Go goals.
Go.
Love that.
Goals. Brilliant. Let's do one last quick fire.
All right.
Okay. So hang on. I'm scrolling.
Licensing.
Monster, stop.
Okay. Episode 167.
Miles
away. Why people fail in property.
Ooh, good one.
So this one was about...
I was going to say, that's a whole episode.
It is a whole episode.
If I had to pick one thing, I'd go with not understanding the numbers. And a second thing, not asking for help. So if you don't understand the numbers, why... This is the thing for me. Oh, I remember the very first investment, how I ended up doing it myself and moving away from the nice man that we gave a lot of money to. Just before we did the training, a girlfriend of mine got caught by a company called Inside Track. And if you've been in the business any amount of time, you will have heard of Inside Track. And she'd paid £5,000 for the membership in order to get access to the deals. And the deal that she was being offered was a city centre two-bed flat in Manchester. It was on the market for something like 125,000 at the time. This is back 2006-07 probably. But when the valuation came back, the rent was not going to cover the mortgage. So maybe they'd said, I'll just make these numbers up. Maybe they said that the rent was going to be £1,000 And the surveyor came back and said that the rent would only be £600 and the mortgage was going to be £700, something like that. So she was going to have to feed the mortgage. An inside track told her this was still a good deal. And they explained to her why it was a good deal. And I'm thinking, what you're missing is that you are taking on a massive amount of debt. It's not the fact that you're putting in just a little deposit. It's the debt that you are taking on that is your responsibility to pay back. And if you don't find a way to pay that back, and the way we do it in property is that we will have a tenant who pays rent, who pays us to use our asset and pays us at a rate that covers the mortgage, covers the letting agent, covers the repairs, so that we are at least neutral. And then, of course, because we're the ones that have taken on all the risk, we want some profit on the top. If you don't understand that bit, you've not understand, well, the buy to let side of it, you've not understood the point of property investing.
Brilliant. That has been, in about 2 minutes, a very succinct lesson, like property 101. That's brilliant. Very easy to understand. Yeah, fantastic.
That's because of the Excel spreadsheets.
I feel like your episode title is going to have something about spreadsheets in it.
I did. Yeah? I have and actually tomatoes. Got my own. Yes, yes. Uh-huh. I have actually got an Excel spread podcast called Love. You've got to love a spreadsheet, and it's also tied up with goals as well. You know, amazing. Doing your goals on a spreadsheet.
Great.
Yeah, brilliant. So Fate has delivered a couple of really good episodes to ask you about. There we are. Well, we'll have to wrap it up there, Vicky. So thank you so much for being on with us. And if people want to reach out to you, how can they get in touch?
Well, with a name like Vicky Wuchet, I'm quite easy to find if you Google me, as long as you can spell it right. And I'm sure you stick it all in the notes. So if you look at VickyWuchet.com, you'll get the website. But if you look for me on socials, I'm Vicky Wuchet. I'm more friendly on Facebook. I'm reluctant on LinkedIn. I've not
and you're
made
a complete
it...
arsehole on Instagram.
Well, no, I was going to say, and I haven't made it to Threads at all. But yeah, you can find me out there somewhere. And YouTube, of course, yeah.
Brilliant.
And my podcast. Podcast. I've got a podcast.
Brilliant.
Oh, I've got a podcast. A Wealthy Life. A Wealthy Life. Yes.
Love it.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Well, anyone listening, go check it out. We'll put some information in the show notes as well. But for now, thank you very much, Vicky. It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Jam with us on social media, where you can hear more and see more. On Facebook, search Property Jam Podcast.
Or you can follow us on Instagram at Property Jam Podcast.
Or you can email us at propertyjampodcast@outlook.com.
See you on the next episode.